For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
So I would like to introduce my friend Shohaku Okamura Roshi, whose work on Dogen is very important for all of us in American Zen. Shohaku leads the Sanshin Zen community based in Bloomington, Indiana, and has published many books about Dogen. I had the privilege of working with him for a couple of years in Kyoto. We translated Eihei Shingi, Dogen's Pure Standards for the Zen Community, and The Wholehearted Way, a wonderful book, translation of Benda Wa with commentary by Shohaku's teacher, Uchiyama Roshi. And then later, when Shohaku was living in San Francisco, we translated Eiko Roku, Dogen's extensive record, a very thick book. And today and this weekend, we have the privilege of hearing from Shohaku about one of Dogen's most important texts, Genjo Koan, and Shohaku's wonderful new book, Realizing Genjo Koan, which is in many ways like The Wholehearted Way, with Uchiyama Roshi's comments on Benda Wa. This is Shohaku's comments on Genjo Koan. And so I'm so very happy that you are here at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here. This is the first visit for me to this place in Chicago. As Tygon-san said, Tygon-san and me worked on translation since many years ago, and we translated three texts, the Benda Wa, and Eihei Shingi, and Eihei Koroku, and those are, I think, very important texts to study Dogen Zen's teaching, and also the nature of Soto Zen practice. How many people have this book? And how many people read this book?
And everybody has copies of the translation of Genjo Koan.
Okay, so all people have read Genjo Koan at least. Good. So Genjo Koan is very familiar text for us who practice Soto Zen or Zen practice based on Dogen Zen's teaching. And I'm not sure about English translation, but at least in Dogen Zenji's original writing, it's very beautiful, very poetic. I first read Genjo Koan when I was 17 years old. When I was high school student, I had many questions about life, and I didn't like school, and I didn't like, you know, the Japanese society at that time. You know, after the World War II, I was born 3 years after World War II. I was born in 3 years after the World War II ended. At that time, you know, Japanese people were really starving. So they wanted to work hard and restore the prosperity. And people worked really hard, to make money. And when I became, until I became a teenager, the basic message I received from Japanese education and also entire society of Japan, that this world is getting better, improving because of science and technology. Things our life is getting, you know, more and more convenient, and we are becoming rich. But when I was a teenager, that was in the 60s, I started here. That is a problem because of the, you know, development of science and technology and economic growth, especially in Japan. Those things caused many problems, such as, you know, pollution. And also because of the economic growth in Japan in the 60s, I was born in Osaka and grown up in a small town between Osaka and Kyoto. Osaka is the second biggest city in Japan to Tokyo. When I was a child, the city named Ibaraki has a small kind of a farming town. So there are many rice paddies, and there are, you know, woods and a pond and rivers, and I could swim in the, in those rivers. But about the time I became 10 years old, the swimming in the river was prohibited because, you know, the factory was built by the river, and because of that pollution. And in the process of that economic growth, many lot of rice paddy was kind of destroyed, and they started to build factories and housings. The population of that town when I was I started to go to the elementary school was about 13,000. But by the time I finished the high school, it became 10 times as much, 300,000. And during that time, you know, the highway was built, and also so-called Shinkansen, the bullet train was also, the railroad of bullet train was constructed. And people said that is development, means getting better. But to me, that is a destruction of the nature where, you know, I was grown up, and those woods or shrine, Shinto shrine or Buddhist temples and rice paddies are the kind of a place we prayed. But we couldn't do that anymore. So to me, that kind of development was destruction. But people said that it's a good thing. And I had a doubt, question about that. And also in Japanese education in the 60s, it's very competitive. So we are requested to study hard, to go to a good high school and prestigious university in order to get a good job. And if we are taught, if we work hard and finish certain prestigious university, then we could get a good job and make a lot of money. Then we can buy, you know, fantastic, you know, cars or houses and all those things. But to me, that kind of life doesn't make any sense. So that was my question. Why we had to work so hard to make money? And no matter how much I, you know, work hard and make money and become successful, you know, sooner or later we'll die. And we cannot, you know, leave anything. So that was my question. When I was a high school student, to me, the entire Japanese society is like one huge money-making machine. And the school is like a factory to produce the part of that machine. And if I study hard, I could be a good part of that machine. But when we become old and couldn't work, then that is replaced by other people. I didn't like that kind of life. So I often escaped from the classroom, and I went to a library at the high school, and I read many books about religion or philosophy and literature, both Japanese and Western. And the more I studied and read those books, my question became kind of deeper. And I read the question, why we have to live, L-I-V-E, why we have to live, why we are born, and what is the meaning or purpose of this life. And I found the question was not so easy one. You know, there are many, you know, philosophers kind of give us the answer, but all those answers are still questionable. I can question. And finally, I reached the point that what is the meaning? What is the value? Is there such a thing there in our life or not? Until then, I think there must be some meaning in this life, and there must be a system of value we have to follow. And I was looking for that answer. But the question, is there any such things called a meaning, is kind of different layer of the question. What is the meaning? What is the meaning of meaning? What is the meaning of searching the meaning? At that time, especially, you know, existentialism was popular. When I was 17, I had so many questions and I had no answer. That is the condition of my life. I think many of American people, not only American, but Western people in that age, 60s, wanted to drop out from that system, that, you know, money-making machine. But I didn't know what is the alternative way of life. So I thought there must be an answer to my question in the books. But that was a mistake. the more I read, the more my question deeper. I could doubt everything, and I couldn't find any answer to myself. So I was, in a sense, almost completely lost. A friend of mine at high school had the same kind of question, and the person that my friend had, another, maybe one of his relatives who went to Antaiji to practice with Sawaki Kodoroshi. So somehow that friend visited Antaiji during a summer vacation. And that was 1965. I was 17. And that was the year Sawaki Kodoroshi died, passed away in December. So my friend met Sawaki Roshi. And that was also the year Uchiyama Kosho Roshi published his first book. And the title of that book was Self or Jiko. And the subtitle of this book is The Religion Without Sect or Schools. And Uchiyama Roshi gave a copy of that book to my friend, and my friend allowed me to read that book. And in that book, Uchiyama Roshi described his process of his journey to find the truth. And after he found the answer, what is the truth, he continued to practice that truth, and he tried to share the truth, his answer about what is truth, to younger generations. Of course, for 17-year-old high school student, his answer, so-called Buddhism or Zen Buddhism, is beyond the reach of my understanding. So I couldn't really understand what was his answer. But I understood he had the same question when he was a teenager. And he tried to find the answer to his question, what is the truth? What is the meaning of life? And to do so, he studied Western philosophy at a university, and he went to a graduate school. He mainly studied German philosophy. And after he finished graduate school, he became a teacher at a Catholic seminary, because he thought in order to really deeply understand Western philosophy, he needs to study Catholic theology. So he went, started to teach philosophy and mathematics at the seminary. And at that time, he had some kind of a hope that he could become a Catholic. But after 6 months, he found it not possible for him to become a Catholic. He said because of its institutionalism and very rigid system of theology. He didn't want to simply accept and believe what is there, what is taught. So he quit that job. And later he said, that 6 months was only time he had a regular job and a regular income. Before that, he was a student, And right after that, he became a Buddhist monk. And not only that intellectual search for the meaning or truth, he had a kind of a very difficult, painful, sad experience in his life. That was while he was a university student, he married a really beautiful, elegant woman, and he lived with the first wife for a few years, but his first wife had a TB, tuberculosis, and died after a few years of their marriage. And from that first wife, he, Uchiyama Roshi himself, transmitted TB. So rest of his life, he lived with TB for almost more than 50 years. So he was a physically very weak person. Anyway, after he, that was before he finished university, but after he quit the job at the Catholic seminary, he married again. And the second wife became sick one day while she was pregnant, and she died within a few days. So he had a really painful experience when in his early 20s. That, you know, the intellectual search for truth or meaning and his painful, sad and painful experience made him to become a Buddhist monk. And after he became a Buddhist monk, being ordained by Sawaki Kodo Roshi. Sawaki Roshi was one of the... one of the very important and well-known Soto Zen master at that time. After very, you know, kind of a hard practice with Sawaki Roshi, he found, you know, this practice and Dogen Zen's teaching was really what he was looking for. And that was what was written in that book. And I knew nothing about Buddhism or Zen or Dogen, so I didn't understand what was the answer he found. But I knew that he had the same question when he was a teenager, and he devoted his life to find the answer, and after he found the answer, he was trying to share with other people. And I really wanted to live like him. That was why I became interested in Buddhism and especially Dogen's teachings. So after I read that book by Uchiyama Roshi, I became interested in Buddhism and Dogen Zen's teaching. And I tried to find books written by Dogen, and also the books about Dogen's teaching. But in the high school library, I found only two or three books by Dogen and on Dogen, about Dogen. Two of them was Shobo Genzo. Of course, it's too difficult for a high school student. Even I couldn't really read even one page. And the second one is Shobo Genzo Zuimonki. That is much a kind of easy to understand, to read, but difficult to understand. You know, those Zuimonki was a record of his talk, so it's not written text. But so it is much easier than Shobogenzo itself, but still it's difficult for high school student because it's written in classic Japanese and it's very different from modern Japanese. And I found only one book about Dogen and his teachings that is a commentary on short chapters or fascicle of Shobogenzo, such as Genjo Koan and Shoji, or Life and Death. And another one, I forget the one. And that commentary was written by Reiji Yamada Zenji. And he was the Bishop of North America. So he, Reiji Yamada Zenji, he later became the abbot of Heiji, had some relation with Suzuki Shinryu Roshi. Anyway, that was the only book I found in the public high school library, and I tried to read it, but it was also difficult for me to understand. But somehow, when I read Genjo Koan, even though I didn't understand almost at all, but I was kind of moved or touched with the beauty of his language. At that time, you know, as many teenagers, I thought I was a poet. I wrote many kind of poems. I don't think that was a poem now, and I quit writing poems when I started to practice Zazen. But at that time, I thought I was a poet. And the beauty of Dogen Zen's writing, especially in Genjo Koan, was very attractive to me, even though I didn't understand. As I wrote in this preface of this book, I understood only one section of Genjo Koan. That was about the fish and birds. Dogen said, if a fish want to figure out what is the entire water or ocean, if a bird wish to see and understand what is the entire sky, then the bird or fish cannot live. And that was only part of Genjo Koan I understood. And it was very kind of hit me, because I was really like the bird who want to understand what is the meaning of flying in the sky before flying, and what is the importance or significance of swimming in the water before start to swimming. That was really my condition. I seriously thought I didn't want to do anything, start to do anything, until I understood the meaning of life. You know, if I make decision to do something without understanding the meaning, then I may have a mistaken choice. Then my life could be complete mistake. So I was really serious. First, I wanted to know the meaning of life. Then I can make a correct choice. That was why I was, you know, reading so many books and trying to find the meaning of life. But Dogen said, as far as we are doing such a thing, we cannot live. So that was really great help. And at the time, at the same time, not only the Dogen's kind of admonition to me, as I said, that 1965 was the year Sawaki Kozono died. After he came back to the school after the summer vacation is over, he allowed me to read Uchamuroshi's book, and I became really interested in Uchamuroshi's way of life. So me and my friend wanted to visit Antaiji to do the session, 5-day session. And during that 5-day session, as Uchamuroshi described in the book Opening the Hand of Thought, they sat 50-minute a period and 10-minute kihin, and simply repeat 14 period a day for 5 days. I didn't understand the fact that mean the meaning of sitting so much. Somehow I wanted to try. So me and my friend wanted to visit Antaiji, but somehow we couldn't because of some event at school. So I lost a chance to meet Sawaki Kodoroshi. That was the fall. Autumn of that year, and Sawaki Roshi died in December of that year. If I went to Antaiji on that occasion, then I could meet with Sawaki Roshi. But I feel I was lucky that I couldn't go to Antaiji at that time. If I go there for the session, I'm pretty sure I thought that was not my thing. You know, for you know, high school student to sit quietly 10 minutes must be difficult. So I feel I was fortunate I couldn't go at that time. So Sawaki Roshi died in December of that year. And next year, in February, my friend had some pain on his stomach, and he had an operation, and he died. Mm-hmm. Yeah, several months later, July of 66, he had a cancer. Because he was very young, cancer grew so quickly. So when the doctor had an operation, the doctor found he couldn't do anything. It was too late. So he died. Until, you know, he became very sick, you know, we discussed about the meaning of life. But when he became really sick a few months before his death, he started to think, I don't want to, you know, discuss about that kind of thing, meaning of life. To live is enough. To live, just living, is hard enough. But I was not sick, so I wanted to know and, you know, keep discussing. But when he died in July 1966, it was very painful, of course, and sad. His death was first experience of someone's death in my life. Until then, I never seen anyone's death. So that was really painful experience, but at that time, I was released. I feel I was released from that question, what is the meaning of life? Because I found, you know, life and death is taking place not in our thinking. And meaning is about thinking. So together with his death, my experience of my friend's death, and also Dogen's teaching that we have to fly or we have to swim before, you know, thinking about meaning. And those two things really helped me to start to do something. So I found I have to do something before questioning about the meaning. That makes me to start to do something, and I wanted to be like Uchiyama Roshi. So I wanted to become his disciple. So once, after I finished high school, that means I was 18, I wanted to visit Antaiji again. But somehow I couldn't find Antaiji. I went to Kyoto, and I knew the address, but I couldn't find Antaiji. You know, Antaiji is a temple. So I expected there's a temple gate, and the name of the temple on that gate, but Antaiji had no temple gate. It was really like an ordinary house. It's a small temple. So somehow I think I went in the neighborhood, but I couldn't find Antaiji. That was the reason I made decision to go to Komodawa University before becoming a practitioner. I wanted to study what is Buddhism and what is Dogen's teaching. And I feel lucky that I couldn't find Antaiji at that time. with the same reason, if I visited Antaiji at the time before understanding, you know, Buddha's or Dogen's teaching, I thought, you know, this is not what I could do. So I started to study Buddhism at Komodawa University because I knew Komodawa was a Soto Zen university. And Sawaki Kodo Roshi was a professor at that university for many years. And I started to study Buddha's teaching and Dogen Zen's teaching. Anyway, that was how I started to study Buddhism and Dogen Zen's teaching. My study was not for the sake of study, but I wanted to become Uchiyama Roshi's disciple, so I wanted to understand what was his teaching, what is his practice, and what was his teaching and practice. That was how I started to practice. So since I was 17 and now I'm 62, I have been walking on this path for more than 40 years. I really feel lucky to become interested in this teaching and practice and started to walk this path when I was very young, more than 40 years I have been really walking this kind of a narrow path. So I only studied and practiced this kind of a strange teaching, practice and teaching of just sitting. And Saoki Roshi's famous teaching is Zazen is good for nothing. And I really like that teaching because I thought there's no meaning of life. If I grasp some meaning, I think that is a kind of fabrication. So I really wanted to live without being supported by the meaning. I wanted to live, just live, without being supported by the meaning. And my, at that time, after, you know, few years of kind of a childish research of meaning, I believed life has no meaning. Because meaning is, how can I say, meaning is created within our relation with, you know, the things and the world or society or the history. So before, you know, the relation between this person and the thing or the life, there's no such thing called meaning. So, you know, life itself has no meaning. But I found that meaning is something we need to create and find within our life. That's why, you know, until we do something, we start to do something, there's no such thing called ready-made meaning of life. You know, that was why I was attracted by Saoki Roshi's teaching that Zazen is good for nothing. So Zazen, to do practice Zazen, there's no meaning, means no belief requested. You can just sit. So from the very beginning, this just sitting practice was very attractive. You know, I can do it without any belief or a grasping of some certain kind of system of value. I wanted to practice in that way. Anyway, that was how I started to practice. So, from the very beginning, Genjo Koan was really important and meaningful to me because of this very simple teaching of Dogen. I could start to live. So since then, since I was 17, I have been, Genjo Koan is one of the most important texts of my life. And also, Genjo Koan is one of the most important writing of Dogen Zenji. So I have been studying Genjo Koan for really many years. What time shall we finish? 11?
11:30, and then...
Okay, 1 hour. I'm sorry, I have a voice throat problem. I came back from Japan on 20th, so I'm still in jet lag. Actually, I went to Japan on 10th. So the day after I arrived in Tokyo, the earthquake happened. Fortunately, I went to Kyoto from Tokyo on that day, on the morning of that day. I didn't experience any difficulties caused by earthquake and tsunami. But everything I saw and hear, heard and read through TV or newspapers, really, you know, overwhelming. So it was really difficult to travel in Japan. But also I visited Uchiyama Roshi's graveyard, actually Uchiyama Roshi's wife, and his grave the day before his memorial day. And also my father died in the New Year Eve of last year. So I wanted to visit his wife. I mean, his wife means my stepmother. And visited the temple. And I could do that. And I could visit many old friends. So I was kind of very happy. But it was a really difficult time in Japan. Anyway, so I'm still in jet lag, so my mind doesn't really work. And I have some difficulty with, I don't think this is cold, but something. So I hope you can hear my voice. Anyway, now I start to talk on this text of Genjo Koan. Maybe first thing I need to talk is the meaning of this title, Genjo and Koan. I said Genjo Koan is one of the most important writings of Dogen. He was born in the year of 1200, and he became a Buddhist monk when he was 13 years old. First, he was ordained in the Tendai school or Tendai tradition in Japan. And yet somehow he was not happy about the condition of Tendai school at his time. So he left Tendai monastery and started to practice Zen. At his time, in the 13th century, Zen was still something very new. Zen was first officially transmitted from China by a Japanese master Eisai, who went to China and received transmission from Chinese Zen master, Rinzai Zen master, and transmitted Rinzai Zen and established a monastery in Kyoto named Kenrinji. And Eisai died in 1215, so 2 years after Dogen became a Buddhist monk. So probably Dogen didn't meet Eisai, even though traditionally people thought Dogen Zenji met Eisai. But anyway, Dogen was practicing at Tendai Monastery until he was 17. Still, he was very young. I think he had, same as me, he had many questions about the condition of Buddhist institution at his time. So anyway, he left the monastery and practiced Rinzai Zen with one of the disciples of Eisai, whose name was Myozen. And he practiced with Myozen until he was 23. So he was there about 7 years, five or seven years. And at Dogen and his teacher Myozen thought, in order to deepen their understanding of Zen teaching and transmit authentic Zen teaching, they thought they need to go to China and practice at the Chinese monastery. So Eisai and Dogen went to China together, a few more monks. And unfortunately, Myozen, Dogen's first teacher, died in China. But right after Myozen died, Dogen met one of the Chinese Zen master whose name was Nyojo in Japanese, and he thought this person was his true teacher. So he practiced with Nyojo or Juchin for 2 more years, and he received Dharma transmission from Nyojo or Juchin and went back to Japan when he was 27. So as a Zen master, he was very young, 27. But we need to understand, he's 27 in his age and 27 in this time for us might be different. I mean, it said Dogen started to study Buddhism when he was 9 years old. And the first text he read was Abhidharma Kosha. Abhidharma Kosha is a big, large text which has 10 volumes. And it's very difficult, of course, written in Chinese. So he started to study Buddhism when he was 9. And before that, he studied Chinese classics with his father or tutors. He was from very prestigious family. It said his father was a very high official in the emperor's government, and his grandfather, his mother's father, was the prime minister. So he received the highest education in Japan at the time. He started studying Chinese classic when he was 4 years old. So, and he was a very brilliant person, almost genius. In my case, I started to study Buddhism when I was 19, when I started to go to Komazawa University. Before that, I studied almost kind of an opposite thing from Buddhism. So for me, when I started to study Buddhism, I had to kind of make adjustment, make change from the way I thought and the way I see the world into Buddhist way of viewing things. But because Dogen Zenji started to study Buddhism when he was 9, his basic way of thinking and viewing things is Buddhism. If we studied Buddhism from the elementary school, it might be different in way of thinking. So by the time when he was 27, he studied Buddhism almost 20 years. And his entire knowledge, range of knowledge, is Buddhism. So it must be really different. When I was 27, I still had a lot of questions about Buddhism. Anyway, after I went back to Japan, he stayed at original Zen monastery in Kyoto named Kenninji for 3 years. And he found Kenninji was not a right place for him, because he received a transmission from Soto Zen Master in China. So his teaching and practice and the teaching and practice at Kenninji at his time might be different. So he left that monastery when he was 30 years old. Before that, right after he went back to Japan, he wrote Fukanza Zengi, or Universal Recommendation of Zazen, when he was 27. And when he was 31, I think, he wrote Rendoa. That is a second writing, and that is also very important writing. And in Rendoa, he described the meaning of practice of Zazen. In Fukanza Zengi, he described how to practice, how to sit, and the meaning of sitting in a very poetic form. And Fukanza Zengi was written in Chinese, but Rendoa was written in Japanese. And in Rendoa, he described the meaning of Zazen practice as Jijuyu Zammai. And second part of Rendoa, he made up 18 questions and he gave the answer. Those questions are the questions Japanese people at his time might have about, you know, this kind of a new Buddhism. And when he was 1233, he started to create his own monastery called Koshoji. And during the very first summer practice period at Koshoji, he wrote Makahanya Haramitsu. This is a kind of comment on the Heart Sutra, Mahaprajna Paramita Vridaya Sutra. It's not a commentary because he doesn't really explain the meaning, but he quotes from the Heart Sutra and also larger Prajna Paramita Sutras, and he made a very short comment. So Makahanya Haramitsu is a really short writing, and I think more than half of that writing was a quote from those sutras. That was first writing at his own monastery Koshoji during the first summer practice period in Soto Zen tradition in Japan. And after the first summer practice period, in the fall, he wrote Genjo Koan. So actually Genjo Koan was fourth writing of Dogen after he went back to Japan. And also the second writing after he founded his own monastery. So at that time, he was a teacher. So Makahanya Haramitsu was offered to his assembly during the practice period, and it is said in the end of Genjo Koan, he wrote this writing, Genjo Koan, for one of his lay student. So this was originally a kind of a Dharma word. Dharma writing for a lay person. In the colophon at the end of this text, it said in the year 1251, he somehow, it said Shuroku, and I translated it as compiled, but no one knows what this exactly means. So he did something on Genjo Koan in the year 1251. That was the 2 years before his death. And some scholars thought, there's no evidence at all, but thought maybe he rewrote Genjo Koan from the original draft to the you know, manuscript we did today, but we don't know why. Some scholars think this is the time he made a collection of 75 versions of Shobo Genzo, and he put Genzo Koan as the very first volume, first chapter of this collection of Shobo Genzo. But there's no evidence. Those are all kind of a guess. But I think because he thought this Genzo Koan is very basic teaching and the foundation of his later teachings, he put Genzo Koan as the first chapter of Shobo Genzo collection. Although Genzo Koan is really short writings, it's really kind of dense, very intensive. So when we took a close look at Genzo Koan, we studied Genzo Koan word by word, line by line, we could see this is the kind of essence of Dogen Zen's teaching, or Dogen Zen's understanding of entire Buddhism, and his view of what is the practice and how we should practice, what is the meaning of practice. So this is really important writing of Dogen Zenji, and this expression Genzo Koan was not really his creation. This expression Genzo Koan was originally used by a Chinese Zen master, but he used this expression Genzo Koan as one of the key words of his entire teaching. And within the 75 version of Shobo Genzo, he used this expression Genzo and Koan, or Genzo Koan as compound, many times. So this, to understand what Genzo Koan means, is really important. And in order to understand what Genzo Koan means, we have to read this entire writing of Genzo Koan, and also entire writings of Dogen. So it's kind of safer to talk what Genzo Koan means after we read this writing, or after we study entire writing of Dogen. But that's not convenient, because it takes a lot of time even to really study Genzo Koan. It takes a long time. Last November, we had Genzoe at Sanshinji in Bloomington. I gave two lectures a day, two 90-minute lecture a day, and in 5 days I gave 9 lectures. But I think I didn't have enough time to cover this entire Genzo Koan. So this time we only have 4 and 1 Dharma talk on Sunday. So I'm pretty sure I cannot talk, you know, entire writing of Genzo Koan. So I think it's better to talk my understanding of what Genzo Koan means before starting talk on that text. So this Genzo Koan is a compound of two words, Genzo and Koan. And each of Genzo and Koan has also a compound of Gen and Jo and Ko and An. Now Chinese word is kind of convenient, you know, by combining two or more Chinese characters, we can create complicated or subtle meanings. Gen has its own meaning, and Jo has its own meaning as two different characters, two different words. But Gen Jo as a compound, as one word, it has a particular meaning which is different from Gen, only what Gen and Jo. So I started to talk about what is the meaning of Gen, Jo, Ko, An. Gen literally means to, as a Chinese word, means to appear. And also to mean actual. And also means a present. So as a verb, this word means to appear. To appear means something that is hidden appear, or something that was a possibility or a potential become actual. So that is a meaning of actuality or actualization. Something which is concealed or hidden become seen. Something unseen become seen. That is what Gen means. And Jo means to become, or to become, to complete. Or another meaning can be success. So Gen Jo as a compound together means something become actual and complete. Or Jo as complete or becoming something. So Gen Jo is actually becoming. And this actually becoming is a kind of, or presently, another word of this game, meaning of this game is this present moment. Now this present moment is Genzai in Japan, in modern Japanese. And also another word, Gendai, means modern times. That means today, at this moment, at this age. So Genjo as a compound means it's something happening, something becoming. It means something happening at this present moment. And this Genjo can be both verb and noun. As a noun, this means something that, or things that is happening right now, actually happening. And as a verb, this means to actualize something, to make it actual. Does it make sense? So Genjo as a compound means something really happening right now, right here, as a reality, as an actuality. And to make something actual through our activity. So those are two basic meaning. And Ko-an, I think all of you know this word Ko-an as a Zen term. Ko-an usually used as a kind of a you know, cases of the expression or actions as an example of enlightenment, and especially in Rinzai tradition, koan is a kind of a question given from teacher to the student. And this koan is often a question without answer, or a question that is not possible to answer with intellectual thinking. So that is a common usage of this word koan. And usually, this word koan considered from this word is not a Buddhist term, Buddhist technological term. This word came from Chinese mundane world, mundane society, and often considered this koan means a public document. Ko literally means public, and an, the usual Chinese character used for this an, means a desk. So an means, ko an actually means the desk in a public office. And this is a place, you know, we think, and we read, and we write. So koan can mean, or this an means our thinking, to think. And also the result or fruits of thinking, that is writing. Or written document. That is why koan is considered as a public document made at the desk of public office. And public office in Chinese, or public document in Chinese society, in ancient Chinese society, means, you know, all those documents made at the public office is kind of issued ultimately by the emperor, Chinese emperor. And the emperor in China, ancient China, had a really absolute authority. So no one could question about what is written in the official public document issued with the name of the emperor. That means that was adopted in Zen tradition and considered that koan is something which express the real or absolute reality. We cannot question, but we have to study and follow. Question in koan is used in Rinzai tradition as a question to study. That is absolute truth. So we cannot question, but we have to study and follow. And those other examples showed or taught by the masters. So we have to really study and embody what koan means, what that true absolute reality means. But as I discussed part of this book, chapter 2 of this book, Dogen Zenji wrote this Chinese word koan using a different Chinese character from the common one. So the common word, Chinese character used is, as I said, means desk or a document, public document. But maybe I should write. Thank you. wish I have a whiteboard or something. These are two Chinese characters. We read an. This is a common, maybe you can see it. This is a common Chinese character for Ko An. And the upper part of this kanji and the left part of this kanji is same, that shows the sound An. And under part of this kanji means is tree or wood. So this An means the table or disc. But Dogen Zenji like this kanji. And this part is the same. An means to be peaceful or to place something on something. But the left part of this kanji means hand. So this an means place a hand on something. As I said, you know, in this book, this an is used as, for example, amma. Amma means massage. So we put our hand on someone's part of body to heal. That means there's some problem there, something disorder. By putting hand, we try to fix it, put it in order. That is what this an means. Actually means to put a hand on it. Oh, thank you very much. This part, the upper part of this kanji and the right part of this kanji is the same. That makes this sound of these two kanji is an. So both are an. And this part, this lower part, means tree or wood. So this is something wooden on which we place something. And that is like a table or desk. And this also means something we do at the desk. That means thinking or writing. And also the result of this thinking and writing, that is a document. But in the case of the second one, this is the kanji or Chinese character Dogen used for Genjo Koan. This left side of this kanji, as I said, means hand. And place hand on something. So this is something we do to fix something when there's something which is not in order. And according to the very oldest commentary on Shobo Genzo, made by Dogen's direct disciple, whose name was Senne, and his disciple Kyogo. Among Dogen's disciples, Senne and his disciple Kyogo was Senne's disciple, but it said he was, when he was very young, he also practiced with Dogen Zenji. Anyway, after Dogen Zenji passed away, Senne and Kyogo left Eheji and returned to Kyoto and found a small temple named Yokoji. And within that small temple, those disciples, Senne and Kyogo, and some other people continued to study Shobogenzo, Dogen Zen Shobogenzo. And that group made the first commentary on Shobogenzo, basically a 75 fascicles or chapters version of Shobogenzo. And in their commentary on Genjo Koan, so those commentary was made Dogen's disciple Wadarumaya and his disciple. So still we think you know, within their commentary, even Dogen Zenji's teaching and also what Dogen said was continued, I mean included within their commentary. And when they interpret this word koan, they use this second character that was what Dogen used. And according to those Senne and Kyogo's commentary, this koan is the way public officers or government officers work. And according to their interpretation, ko or public, ko means public, and public means what they wrote, or their definition of what public means is hei, who, hei. Well, maybe I should use new paper. Hei and who hei. Hei can mean peace and also mean equal or well balanced or equal or equality means fair. And who is not. And again, hei. So hei, who hei, means equalize inequality. That means when the situation is not fair, that means there's something not equal, something not fair, something, you know, discriminated. To make it equalize, to put it in order, to make the situation fair to all people equally. That is what to be public means. So as a public officer, when we public officers work with people, they need to see all people equally without discrimination. And if there is some not equal, not fair, a situation, the public officers or government officers need to work to make it fair. That is the idea of being public in China, in Chinese culture. So equalizing inequality or non-equality is the meaning of ko, according to their commentary. And their definition of an is shu gun. Shu means to keep or maintain or protect. And boon, what is boon? Boon is portion or part, and also a lot. So I translate this as a word, keep a lot. Maintain one lot, keep one lot. Mm-hmm. That means when a public officer work as a part of this, you know, system of public office, each officer has its own part, its own position or lot. And they should not step on other person's toe. So we should keep one's lot. You know, in the case of, you know, the monastery, there are certain officers, such as a director, or ino, or tenzo, or work leaders. All those people, officers, work for the public to make things equal. Work, or they work equally with all the assembly, all people in the community. But when they work as a particular position or officer, they have their own kind of area. They can use they have authority and power, and yet that authority and power is limited. So then the person has the authority and power to make decision about preparation for food, meals. And work leader has its own responsibility and authority. So each position, each person in a certain particular position has different function, and they need to keep their own lot. Does it make sense? So, all as Dogen Zenji said in the very beginning of Tenzo Kyokun, all those six, let me use the example of the monastery, all those six temple officers, monastic officers, are all, Dogen Zenji said, all children of Buddha. So, and they all work for the sake of the community. That is the meaning of ko, or being public. And yet each person or each officer has its own area. They have responsibility and also authority. And they should not, step on other people's toe. So with these two words together, ko and an, means we are all working together for the sake of public. And yet each person has its own unique function. And so we should respect other people's function and authority. So each person is unique, has a unique way of doing things, and yet they are all work for the public. That is the meaning, according to Senne and Kyogo's commentary on Genjo Koan. So my understanding of this word Koan is, of course, this koan is the same word with the koan used as a common Zen word, that is the expression of absolute truth or reality, and also a question we have to study. And yet, this, and also, according to Senne and Kyogo, this koan together means two sides of reality of our life. One is we are living together with all beings. And yet each person, each one of us, not only people, but each thing has its own uniqueness. In a sense, that, so these two sides is in a sense the same as difference and unity. In merging of difference and unity in Sando Kai. So this word, to me, this is my interpretation, so don't believe me. Please inquire by your study, by yourself. But in my interpretation or understanding, this koan together means two sides of reality. One is we are living together with all beings as one kind of a network of interdependent origination. But each one of us is not of this network, have uniqueness. So there are two sides. We are all different and individual and independent for a certain degree. And yet, we are, you know, part of this entirety, entire network. Together. That is my understanding of koan. So this expression as a title, Genjo and Koan together, my understanding of Genjo Koan as, you know, as the title of this writing is Genjo, that is something actually happening right now, right here, is itself koan. That is one meaning. Something happening right now, right here, is itself true reality of all beings. And yet, within this true reality of all beings, there's two almost opposite side are included. One is we are one together with all beings. And yet, each one of us are different. So we need to respect that difference. So, you know, difference and unity are there within this expression of koan. And one of the meaning of Genjo Koan is this happening, or everything that is happening this moment, right now, right here, is itself koan, the reality of all beings, and in which these two sides are included. And another meaning of Genjo Koan is we need to actualize or express this reality of beings, all beings, through our activity, through each and every activity using this body and mind. So, does it make sense? There are two sides. When we read Genjo as noun, this means everything happening right now, right here, is reality itself. There's no place we can find reality beside right now, right here. And yet is very important word in Dogen's teaching. And yet, we are almost always lose the sight of this reality. We are almost always, this is me. And this is the center of the world. I'm most important. All other things and people are the kind of a resource or material I can use to make me happy. That is a kind of a delusion or a delusive way of thinking. But actually, we think in that way as an individual and also as human beings as a total, as an entirety we think, you know, this planet is our possession, and we can use any part of this nature to make us happy or become rich or our life become more convenient and, you know, for make us more and more happy and make our life more and more convenient. We use anything in this planet and little by little, you know, we destroy the nature. That is the question I had when I was a teenager. In order to make our life and the society kind of more convenient and rich and easier, we don't mind about killing the, you know, small living beings. And in Japan, even they destroy the mountains to build houses. If you go to Japan, you can see, you know, half of the mountain was destroyed, and many houses are there.
Here too, we do that to get coal.
Or, you know, in the city, we pave everywhere, and make pavement means the soil is like a desert. No one can live. No, you know, grasses or plants or animals can live there. So by creating the cities, we creating the desert where not many living beings can live. And we think that is development. I think that is based on this, you know, upside down way of viewing reality of our life. You know, even though we are a small part of nature and living together with all people and all beings, still we think this, we are the owner of this nature and we can use whatever we want. That is really basic delusion for us, and not only individual, but also as a human civilization, as an entirety. And I think that made our life kind of more difficult. You know, to me, you know, in a sense, human material civilization was like a cancer. You know, cancer is a part of our body, but somehow cancer grow not in accord with the order of entirety of this body. And when the cancer grow more than certain degree, the entire body die. And when this body die, the cancer also have to die. So this is a kind of a very paradoxical way of life. But somehow we live in that way. So to me, the meaning of studying Dogen or Buddhism in general is to found the change this upside down way of doing things into normal way. That to see how we are living together with all beings, and each and every beings are unique. So we need to value and respect the uniqueness of all beings. And I think the important point is to keep this network of interdependent origination in a healthy condition. If we injured, then we injure ourselves. That is my very basic understanding and meaning of practice of this kind of a strange practice called just sitting. And Dogen Zenji's teaching, not only Dogen Zenji's, but also Buddha's teaching in general. Well, I think it's time to stop talking.